Ferdinand Marcos Jr. and Sara Duterte officially proclaimed as the next Philippine president and vice president. In one of his first moves as president-elect, Marcos names more members to his cabinet. The Philippine Bull Body is set to proclaim the winning party list groups today, including those with pending cancellation cases. We speak with one of those groups, the Kabataan Party List, later on in the show. And the grandfather of the Texas school gunman apologizes to the families of the victims. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. officially proclaimed as the Philippines' next president. Marcos Jr. won the presidential race with an overwhelming lead, getting 58% of the votes cast. That's over 31 million votes, which is nearly twice as many as his closest rival, Vice President Lenny Robredo, garnered. That makes him the first majority president under the 1987 Constitution. He's also the third child of a president to return to the palace in his own right after Gloria Arroyo and Noynoy Aquino.
I promise you that we may not be perfect, but we will always strive to perfection. I ask you all, pray for me. Wish me well. I want to do well. Because when a president does well, the country does well. And I want to do well for this country.
For the Marcos family, his victory serves as a political vindication of sorts nearly four decades later, after his father, the late dictator Ferdinand Marcos Sr., was ousted from office in the 1986 People Power Revolution.
We're very, very grateful for a second chance, as it were, dahil medyo mabigat ang pinagdaanan ng aking pamilya. Talagang matapos yung 1986, kung ano-anong kaso ang hinarap namin, kung anong pangungutya at pang-aapi, sabihin na natin, medyo hirap talaga yung pamilya namin for the past almost four decades. So, nagpapasalamat ako sa lahat ng nagtiwala sa amin.
Also proclaimed on Wednesday, Marcos's running mate and the daughter of President Rodrigo Duterte, Sara Duterte Carpio, as vice president-elect. Like Marcos Jr., she is the first majority vice president under the current constitution. Duterte Carpio will be the third female vice president of the country. The palace, meanwhile, congratulates the Marcos Duterte tandem for winning this year's elections. In a statement, acting presidential spokesperson Martin Andanar urged Filipinos to rally behind the country's new leaders. Senate Majority Leader Zubiri also calling for unity.
It is a time to heal from this divisive campaign. It is a time to respect the will of the majority of our electorate. And most importantly, it is a time to unite for the welfare and progress of our people and rally behind our flag and our country.
President-elect Marcos asks for guidance from one of his predecessors, Gloria Macapagal Arroyo, as he prepares to be sworn into office next month. Marcos met Arroyo at the Batasan Pambansa on the sidelines of his proclamation Wednesday. Arroyo led a tumultuous presidency from 2001 to 2010. She is known to have brokered the Marcos Duterte tandem. Prove us wrong, that message coming from the National Union of People's Lawyers as it voiced its discontent over Marcos's proclamation. The NUPL said the return of the Marcoses to Malacañang bodes a bleak and dreary future for the country. It adds it will be gladly surprised if Marcos proves them wrong on issues of human rights, good governance, and social justice, despite the evident signals showing the contrary. It also called for accountability at all levels, past, present, and future. The Macabayan Bloc, meanwhile, explained their walkout during the proclamation, saying they did not want to glorify what the incoming regime, which they called dictatorial, a play on words they coined combining dictatorship and tyranny.
Kailangan lang talagang irehistro namin yung aming pagtutol doon sa resolution o proclamation dahil hindi kami niniwala na itong eleksyon na ito ay eleksyon na talagang namayani yung boses na mamamayan. No? Ito ay produkto ng nabanggit na natin kanina. Hindi ito nangyari overnight. It's a massive disinformation this past several years, even decades probably. No? At nakita naman natin, may mga nakausap nga akong mga kasamahan kahapon na kahit sila ay nabiglasan, napakatindi daw ng bilihan ng boto nitong mga nitong nakaraang eleksyon na ito. No?
The first 100 days of Marcos Jr.'s presidency is important. Political analyst Jean Franco says this is when the public will see what the plans and initiatives of the incoming chief executive are. For Franco, she believes this should be Marcos Jr.'s priorities.
Yung taas ng presyo ng bilihin, tsaka yung employment, kasi maraming na-displaced, diba? At saka of course, yung edukasyon kasi kailangan na talaga bumalik ng mga estudyante sa face-to-face.
Another political analyst on the other hand says Marcos must stay true to his promise of unifying the people.
So I would actually really look at future President Marcos to see whether he will make good on his promise to unify the people. Is he going to be, make sure that regions that did not vote for him are not punished?
Marcos has been given a generous gift by the Filipino people. That's according to political analyst Julio Tihanki. But he notes Marcos's landslide victory may not be a full absolution just yet.
It is not yet a full absolution. No? Perhaps it's I would say that it might be considered a pardon, right? So you might be given a pardon, but not necessarily forgiven, right? Because there has been no admission of whatever sins or crime that have been committed in the first place. But of course, politically speaking, a huge and historic mandate such as what this incoming administration has achieved can be considered some form of a pardon, no? By the people.
In one of his first moves since his proclamation, President-elect Marcos reveals more names of who will compose his economic team. Central Bank Governor Benjamin Diokno has been named the new finance secretary. In a statement, Diokno confirmed he has accepted the offer. He says it's an honor to help the incoming administration manage the country's fiscal affairs. The outgoing central bank governor will be replaced by former socio-economic planning chief Felipe Medalla. Diokno said he recommended Medalla to take over to ensure closer coordination between fiscal and monetary authorities. Marcos says he will hold more talks with Diokno to discuss the country's fiscal policies.
I was just watching the news before I came here. Marami na talaga ng tataas ang interest rate around the country. So this is what we were talking with BSP President Ben Diokno. If we're going to raise interest rates, if our investment rating will change, kung bababa ba yan, or can we do something to keep it... He seems optimistic, to an extent, I share his optimism, and I think we can do it. But we have to be very, very, how do you say? We have to be very circumspect about making sudden changes, because as we've seen, all of these sudden changes have had some unintended consequences in other parts of the hindi mo na makakalain may pumuntok doon kasi dito sa may ginawa ka rito. Like I said, the economy is a living thing and it's always a work in progress.
Meanwhile, Management Association of the Philippines President Fred Pascual has been tapped as the next Trade and Industry Chief. Well, San Miguel Corporation Tollways President and CEO Manny Bonoan will reportedly be the next Public Works and Highways Secretary. Senator Ronald Bato de la Rosa confident the upper chamber will agree on a new leader before the 19th Congress opens. De la Rosa says a number of his colleagues have pledged support for Senator Cynthia Villar as Senate President, but he adds the votes may still change come decision day. That's if President-elect Marcos makes known his choice on who should lead the Senate.
Pwede ka natin kung may mga halimbawa, mayroong susuportahan ng Malacanang na magiging ISPE, sabihin ng ni incoming president na itong gusto kong suportahan ninyo, then maybe mayroon diyang magkakaroon ng exodus from one camp to another, posibleng mangyari.
The Commission on Elections has released the official roster of party list groups that won in the May polls. 55 party list organizations secured at least one seat in Congress. Leading the pack is ACT-CIS, followed by One Rider PL, Tingog Party List, Ako Bicol, and Sagip. The COMELEC has set the proclamation for the winning party list at 4 in the afternoon today at the Philippine International Convention Center, or PICC. Commissioner George Garcia says even party list organizations with pending cancellation cases, such as Kabataan and Gabriela, will be proclaimed.
Before, we already did that. May mga pending cases din po yung ibang party list, and we still proceeded to proclaim these party list organizations. I think it's so unfair if simply because you have a pending case na questioning the qualification or the accreditation of the party list that you will not proclaim the party list. So in this case, we exercise our discretion in the same manner that under ordinary circumstances, we are likewise proclaiming candidates even with pending disqualification cases with the Commission on Elections, simply because first, there was already the mandate of the people. What if the cases are really not meritorious?
Well, joining us now, Kabataan Party List first nominee, Raul Manuel. Congressman, good afternoon to you. Thank you for joining us today.
Hello. Good afternoon to everyone.
All right. So first, I'm going to get your reaction to what Commissioner George Garcia just said, that you will be proclaimed after all. You were sort of preparing for a fight then, but now that it's official, you will get proclaimed. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes. We welcome natin yung pronouncement that Kabataan Party List as well as Gabriela Party List will be proclaimed later at the ceremony in PICC. Actually, we also would be vigilant that we would be issued a certificate of proclamation kasi pwede ding ma-proclaim kami pero hindi kami nila bibigyan ng certificate. We will hold on to our hopes that there will be no more barriers to us sitting in Congress to pursue youth goals inside that chamber.
Bakit may ganong klaseng suspicion, Raul, na pwedeng hindi pa kayo bigyan ng certificate?
On guard tayo kasi may instances na rin wherein nagawa yan ng COMELEC. For example, in the past, when cases were filed against Duterte Youth Party List, they were proclaimed at the ceremony but their certificate of proclamation was withheld. So this time, gusto lang din naming maging sigurado na ma-proclaim tayo and we'll also have that certificate of proclamation.
Now, you've been winning since 2007. Your first bid, you lost then, I believe that was in 2004. But since then, Kabataan Party List has been able to secure at least one seat. What makes this win different for you?
Yung pagkapanalo natin ngayon, it is significant in the sense that young people right now are living in times wherein we are being silenced. Tapos gustong tanggalan pa nga ng boses yung mga kabataan, especially by agents like the National Task Force to End Local Communist Armed Conflict. They poured public funds so that we would be defeated, and even on the day before the elections, nagpakalat sila ng fake COMELEC resolution to make it appear that we were disqualified so that people would not vote for us. So our victory means that we have hurdled all those attempts, especially of NTF-ELCAC, to remove us from Congress.
What does this victory mean for you, Congressman Manuel, given that majority of those that voted in the past in the just concluded elections really came from the youth sector and their voices were heard? They voted for President-elect Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. So what does this victory mean for the group, considering the results of the elections?
the challenge continues for us to combat disinformation in our country. Tingin natin, while the youth also aspires to have a better future and have better governance, to elect leaders na yun yung mamumuno towards better policies for the youth and the general population. But the powers of disinformation have been too much. Kaya isa din to sa mga kinikilala nating dapat nating labanan. And also, this forms part of our plans to push for reforms in the educational system, how we teach critical thinking, history, especially that under current educational curricula, tinanggal yung history sa basic education.
Mm, I'm glad that you mentioned that because, as I mentioned earlier, you were part of Congress already since 2007. That's way before the law was passed for K-12 and way before, all these criticisms now on the education system came about. You're already entrenched in the system. When we began to see these cracks, what did you do about it? How did you use your position to sort of prevent the trajectory, to sort of prevent or at least avoid what we're seeing right now?
When the K-12 program was being legislated in Congress, isa sa mga tiniyak natin ay paano aayusin sana yung tinuturo sa ating mga kabataan. However, when the law passed on to DepEd the task of drafting the curricula, doon tayo nawalan ng leverage para sana tiyakin that history, civics, and similar topics would be in the curriculum and would be taught well. Mm-hmm. So now that we will enter Congress, once again, isa yun sa mga isulong natin, how the teaching of these kinds of topics would be standardized so that they would not be prone to the interpretation or to various versions, especially if we are talking about facts and historical records.
Mm-mm. And sometimes it's not even about interpretation. Sometimes it's really just about the lack of time. Alam naman natin yung marami sa ating mga guro, congressman, walang panahon na para makaisip pa kung paano nila ituturo. Even if you standardize it, they're just burdened with so many things that they have to do that they don't even have time to go deeply, dive deeply into the information that they do want to teach our learners.
Mm-hmm. With that, aside from, of course, we are representing the youth sector, but aside from that, we also care about what happens in the education sector, and that includes our teachers. So we will see to it na yung mga guro din natin, they would not be overburdened with lots of administrative tasks na pinapasa sa kanila, kaya pwedeng hindi sila makapaglaan ng significant time and attention to education. So we will address those matters and see to it that our education crisis right now would be given the spotlight that it deserves, kasi kawawa na yung mga kabataan.
Let's go back to the topic at hand here. You almost did not get proclaimed, or you almost won't be proclaimed this afternoon because, of course, of the allegations against your group stemming from the NTFL-CAC linking you to the communist movement. So let me ask you, I want to take this opportunity to ask you, have you, the Kabataan party list, have you ever supported the CPP-NPA-NDF?
No. Clear sa ating constitution, sa ating mission and vision, and also copies of that can be made public, na wala sa advocacies natin no, yung mga bagay na kine-claim ng NTFL-CAC na yun yung basis for us to be affiliated with the CPP-NPA-NDF. Actually, they filed cases before, pero may mga cases na nabasura na rin ng Department of Justice, ng Supreme Court, and they have been repeating the same claims. Kaya naman na madali natin siyang madedebunk.
Do you condemn the atrocities committed by the CPP-NPA-NDF?
Yes, we condemn as atrocities lahat ng mga human rights violations committed by groups. At gusto natin na dumaan sa mga patas na mechanisms or bodies yung pag-investigate sa ganong mga kaso.
Have you ever funneled funds from your office at the House of Representatives to the movement, the communist movement?
No, hindi tayo nag-channel ng funds doon. We conduct our own income generating activities na nache-check din ating mga members and even our chapters on their own. They conduct their own mechanisms to generate and to spend funds in line with the activities para sa kanilang mga members.
Just because you're going to get proclaimed this afternoon, that doesn't mean that the allegations, the accusations will stop. How do you think this is going to be for you? How do you think things are going to look like for Kabataan Party List and also Gabriela for the next few years?
Yes. Hanggat nandyan yung National Task Force to End Local Communist Armed Conflict or NTFLCA, we don't expect na madali silang titigil. Kasi of course, ngayon, we think na they're hurt. Kasi yung goal talaga nila is to remove all Makabayan Bloc party lists from Congress. Pero dahil nakapasok pa rin tayo, somehow hurt sila. And they would do all that they can through the Office of the Solicitor General to file more Trump Up cases. Pero as long as we have our young people and other supporters, tingin natin kaya-kaya pa rin nating mag-press on dun sa COMELEC at iba pang bodies na hayaan nang makaupo at makapagsilbi yung Kabataan Party List.
Bakit ba importante na manatili ang Kabataan Party List sa Kongreso? Ano na ho ba ang naiambag ng Kabataan Party List sa nation building, sa kung saan patungo ang ating bayan?
Isa sa mga naging landmark na naisabatas natin ay yung free college education for state universities, pati mga local universities. We lobbied for that inside and outside of Congress hanggang sa makagalvanize ng support at naisabatas eventually. So this proves na necessary pa rin na merong bosses yung young people natin inside Congress. And we can do much more, especially with the pressing concerns of our young people. We have been looking forward na ma-speed up na yung safe reopening na ating mga campuses, matulungan yung students who have dropped out because of the costs brought about by distance learning, at paano din talaga matitiyak din yung job opportunities for the youth, lalo na't nahihirapan sila makapaghanap ng trabaho after they graduate. So these are things that we will work on. No? Kaya ganun ka-crucial na hindi tayo matanggal sa Kongreso.
Representative, kanina nabanggit nyo ang isa sa mga naging problema din patuloy na nagiging problema ay yung disinformation. Ano kaya ang pwedeng gawin? Ano kaya ang pwedeng ma-legislate? Ano kaya ang batas na pwedeng maipasa para labanan, patuloy na labanan itong disinformation?
Aside sa ano yung pwede nating maihain ng mga reforms sa education, ang isang crucial din talaga ay paano natin mapapanagot yung mga involved dun sa disinformation, lalo na't napangalanan na yung mga maraming disinformation networks na halimbawa natitrace kung sino yung mga politiko yung nasa likod ng ganong mga trolls, halimbawa yung propaganda machineries nila. And also, how we also call on yung mga companies mismo, yung mga social media companies, na sila din naman yung kaya sana mag-level off ng playing field eh. Kaso dahil hindi nila agad-agad na hold accountable din yung mga nasa likod ng mga disinformation networks, kaya naman nagpapatuloy siya. So yun yung approach natin, no? Wherein lahat ng dapat sana nating ma-call on at ma-hold accountable, dapat humarap.
And why is it important for the youth sector to lead this initiative? And why should they listen to you?
Yung mga kabataan natin, lalo na yung mga relatively younger, sila yung mga nabuhay, lumaki using gadgets. Bata pa lang sila, they use YouTube, even TikTok to watch videos. And nagiging channel din talaga to, not just for learning, pero nagagamit din siya nung merong mga ill intentions to peddle disinformation. Kaya sa mga kabataan, this battle is also being owned up by our sector. Na paano proactively ito sasalagin?
You know, your group, the Makabayan Bloc, you've been known to voice out legitimate dissent no matter the administration. When we talk about the incoming Marcos administration, what are your expectations? Do you think that democratic space will be limited, or do you think it will remain the same? Tell us about your expectations.
Realistically, tingin natin magko-constrict pa yung democratic spaces that exist in our country. Limited na, it will be further constricted especially because the one that was proclaimed pledges to increase funding for the National Task Force to End Local Communist Armed Conflict. And it is this task force which tries to act as an umbrella to intervene in the affairs of even civilian agencies. Kaya naman, magiging hamon talaga to, but yung approach natin sa loob ng legislative, supposedly naman independent branch tayo ng government. So we will carry on with our task of filing pro-youth and pro-people bills and resolutions. And it is up to the executive, no, at sa allies nila sa loob ng legislative kung ano yung ipaprioritize nila. If they don't listen to the demands of the people, they are the ones who are exposing themselves, no, as pwedeng insensitive sila dun sa ano yung mga gusto ng mamamayan. So gagawin lang natin yung ating trabaho.
After his proclamation yesterday, President-elect Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. faced the media, and in the end, he had this message to tell the people. He said in so many words, pray for me, wish me well, because the president or the country will only do well if the president does well, and he wants to do well for this country. How do you accept that message? What is your reaction to that?
For us, yung rhetoric nila, yung empty rhetoric of unity na hanggang ngayon, they still try to make that the foundation of their governance. Para sa atin, hollow siya. Lalo na kung yung concept nila ng unity is for us to just keep quiet, to just follow what their team and their allies want to do with the nation, even though that entails silencing sources of dissent and not listening to the demands of the people. Babantayan ng mga tao, halimbawa, yung promise na gagawing 20 pesos yung cost per kilo ng bigas. At kung hindi yun mangyari, karapatan ng mga tao na magtanong or mag-send ang kanilang mga complaints, because that's part of democracy. And if they claim na may democracy pa nga, they should not be at the forefront of demonizing yung magiging sources ng dissent na galing mismo sa mamamayan.
This administration hasn't even started. We saw the proclamation yesterday. We have yet to see the inauguration. He has yet to really begin work, and that's going to happen July 1st. But already we're hearing these things from you. What do you tell people who think, you know, this legitimate dissent that you're voicing out right now, even without seeing any proof yet of how he is going to work as president of this country, is this tantamount to sort of discrediting, undermining this administration that hasn't even begun to work yet?
We are basing our approach na dun sa ano din yung nakikita nating trajectory ng administration. Their administration will be a continuity of what has been done by the Duterte administration in terms of halimbawa sa spheres ng human rights, sa economy din, yung kanilang framework na nilalatag would not be that different from the past. No? Kaya given that we have such kind of expectation, we are on guard, no? At always, dahil nga ngayon pa lang nagpapakalat na rin ng takot even among young people na mabuti pa nga manahimik na lang, huwag na magsalita because they fear for their lives. Ngayon pa lang, we are already preparing na dapat kung may makita tayong mali, we have to speak out, no? Kasi part yun ng ating responsibility actually sa ating bansa na huwag hayaan yung mga mangyayaring mali na magpatuloy na lang.
And we're going to have to leave it at that. Raul Manuel Kabataan, Party List first nominee. Thank you for joining us today. Appreciate you coming to the show. Take care and you keep safe.
Thank you din. Magandang hapon.
And from there, we're going to take a quick break. Up ahead, Texas gubernatorial candidate Beto O'Rourke confronts the state's Republican governor in the wake of a deadly shooting at a school in Uvalde. Details of that and more when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with us here on ANC. And we are back here still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Ferdinand Marcos Jr. and Sara Duterte officially proclaimed as the next Philippine president and vice president. In one of his first moves as president-elect, Marcos names more members to his cabinet. The Philippine poll body is set to proclaim the winning party list groups today, including those with pending cancellation cases. And the grandfather of the Texas school gunman apologizes to the families of the victims. And we're back with an update now on the tragic school shooting in Uvalde, Texas. In a press briefing, Texas Governor Greg Abbott said the 18-year-old gunman posted on Facebook about his plan to attack a school 15 minutes before opening fire. According to Abbott, the gunman shot his grandmother in the face before heading to the school where he shot dead 19 children and two teachers with an assault rifle. Texas gubernatorial candidate and gun control advocate Beto O'Rourke, meanwhile, blamed Abbott, a Republican, for the shooting. O'Rourke, who is challenging the governor in the November elections, heckled Abbott during the briefing.
You're out of line and an embarrassment.
It was after El Paso.
Sit down and don't play.
The next shooting is right now, and you are doing nothing.
No, you need to get his ass out of here. This is the place to talk to
this over. This is totally predictable when you...
Sir, you're out of line. Sir, you are out of line. Sir, you are out of line. Please leave this auditorium.
Sir, you need to exit.
I can't believe you're a... It would come to a deal like this to make a political issue.
Speaking to reporters after being kicked out of the venue, O'Rourke called out Abbott for doing nothing about gun control in the state.
Five of the worst mass shootings in U.S. history right here in this state in the last 5 years. He was governor for every single one of them. These kids died because the governor of the state of Texas, the most powerful man in the state, chose to do nothing. In fact, the only thing he did was make it easier to buy a gun. The only thing he did was make it easier to carry a gun in public. And he bragged about the fact that there would be no background check, no training, no vetting whatsoever.
Meanwhile, U.S. President Joe Biden says he and his wife Jill will be traveling to Texas in the coming days to offer comfort to the grieving community there. The National Rifle Association, the most powerful gun lobby in the U.S., called the Texas school shooter a lone, deranged criminal. The group is facing fresh criticism for promoting the rights of gun owners. In a brief statement, the NRA said it was committed to making schools secure, but it did not address how the 18-year-old gunman had been able to legally buy the assault rifle used in the mass shooting. The grandfather of the Texas school shooter apologizes to the family of the victims. Speaking to local media, 73-year-old Rolando Reyes said he's also in pain over the incident. He also revealed that his wife, who was shot in the face, will be undergoing surgery. The shooter's grandmother is currently in critical condition. And still in the U.S., President Joe Biden signs an executive order further regulating federal law enforcement. The move comes on the second death anniversary of African-American George Floyd, who was murdered by a white police officer in Minneapolis. The order provides for the creation of a national database to list all reports, disciplinary procedures, and complaints against members of federal law enforcement agencies. It also prohibits chokeholds and carotid artery strangulation or compression techniques, except in exceptional situations. Floyd died of asphyxiation after a police officer pressed his knee onto his neck for more than 9 minutes. Biden signed the measure in the presence of Floyd's family and other families of victims of police brutality. In other news, Chinese President Xi Jinping defends his country's human rights progress during a video call with UN Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet. She asserts China has successfully found a path of human rights development, allowing Chinese people to enjoy rights like never before. He also says Beijing is ready to actively conduct human rights dialogue in cooperation with all other parties. Meanwhile, state news agency CCTV reported Bachelet is saying her agency is willing to strengthen cooperation with the Chinese side. Bachelet is visiting the far western region of Xinjiang, where China is accused of detaining over 1 million Uyghurs and other Muslim minorities. China denies these allegations. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson still refusing to resign over the so-called Partygate. An internal inquiry has found that Johnson presided over a culture of lockdown-breaking parties and heavy drinking at Downing Street at the height of the pandemic. The long-awaited report by senior civil servant Sue Gray included photographs of Johnson toasting staff with wine and revelries that sometimes stretched into the early hours. Johnson has since apologized for the rule-breaking, but he argues he was absent from most of the events probed and denied ever lying to lawmakers or urging Gray to bury her report. Opinion polls indicated deep public disapproval, with a snap survey Wednesday finding 3 in 5 people think Johnson should resign. But conservative lawmakers, the only people able to force Johnson from office outside an election, are showing few signs of willingness to move against him. Russian President Vladimir Putin signs a decree simplifying the process for residents of Kherson and Zaporizhzhia regions to acquire Russian citizenship and passports. The decree makes a further step, or marks a further step, towards a, quote, Russification of the two Russian-occupied regions. Moscow plans to create a land bridge linking Russia to the Crimean Peninsula, which it seized from Ukraine in 2014. Applicants are not required to have lived in Russia and do not need to provide evidence of sufficient funds or pass a Russian language test. Kyiv slammed Putin's move, saying it is a violation of international law. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky rebukes the West for not doing enough to help Kyiv win the war. This as fierce battles raged in eastern Ukraine. Zelensky called out the international community for paying too much attention to Russia's interests and too little to Ukraine's. He also slammed proposals that Ukraine might have to sacrifice some territory to end the conflict.
No matter what the Russian state does, there's always someone who says, let's take its interests into account. This year in Davos, it was heard again. Despite thousands of Russian missiles hitting Ukraine, despite tens of thousands of Ukrainians killed, and behind all these geopolitical speculations of those who advise Ukraine to give away something to Russia, great geopoliticians are always unwilling to see ordinary people. Ordinary Ukrainians, millions of those who actually live in the territory, they propose to exchange for the illusion of peace.
Well, back here at home, the number of individuals fully vaccinated against COVID-19 in the Philippines breaches the 69 million mark. Our very own Vivian Gulia now joins us on the line with that. Vivian, go ahead.
Carmina, the Philippines has fully vaccinated against COVID-19 more than 69.1 million individuals. This leaves the Duterte government a little over a month to complete the COVID jab of over 7.8 million more individuals in order to achieve its target of fully vaccinating 77 million Filipinos by June 30th. National Task Force Against COVID-19 Deputy Chief Implementer Secretary Vince Deason says they will seek to ramp up jabbing in the remaining months by holding special vaccination drives in provinces and regions that have yet to fully vaccinate their targets. These include the Bangsamoro Autonomous Region in Muslim Mindanao and Region 12. Deason admits the rollout of the first booster shot in the country remains slow, with only close to 14 million recipients out of the over 50 million eligible, something he attributes to the complacency of many, as the Philippines has yet to see another surge in COVID cases. But Deason reminds the public the pandemic is not yet over, with some countries reporting a spike in COVID infections driven by newer and more transmissible Omicron subvariants. That is why he appeals to eligible individuals to get vaccinated and boosted in order to keep their protection up against hospitalizations and deaths. A ceremonial COVID vaccination of second booster shot was held at a mall in Mandaluyong City this morning, and among the recipients, Mayor-elect Benjamin Abalos Sr. So far, only healthcare workers, senior citizens, and immunocompromised individuals are eligible to get an additional booster jab. Government data show 171,848 received it so far. Meanwhile, there are no formal talks yet between the incumbent vaccination authorities and the incoming administration, but the NTF against COVID-19 is already preparing for transition. That's according to Dizon, who says documents reflecting the challenges and best practices in the COVID vaccine rollouts are now being ready. His recommendation, continue decentralizing the COVID jabbing program to make vaccines more accessible to the public. Carmina, back to you.
Thanks a lot, Viv. Take care and keep safe. Back here in the newsroom, the Philippine Finance Department proposes new and higher taxes to enable the country's new government to tackle the ballooning debt inherited from the outgoing administration. But as Warren de Guzman tells us, the measures are already being opposed by some critics.
New taxes and more efficient taxation. These are the proposals of the outgoing Duterte cabinet for the incoming Marcos administration as they face 3.2 trillion pesos in COVID-related debt, with principal payments due as early as 2023. The Fiscal Consolidation and Resource Mobilization Plan says borrowing to pay down the debt is not an option, as total programmed outstanding debt is already set to hit 13.1 trillion pesos by the end of 2022. And the Philippine debt-to-GDP ratio is already above the internationally accepted threshold of 60% for prudential fiscal management. The DOF says cutting spending is also not an option because more spending in infrastructure, including the continuation of the Build, Build, Build initiative, is vital to growth. That leaves new taxes and more efficient taxation as the only option. The proposal includes taxes on single-use plastics, luxury goods, carbon emissions, and cryptocurrencies, value-added tax on digital services, higher taxes on alcohol and cigarettes, and the deferment of the final reduction on personal income tax under the TRAIN law from 2023 to 2025. Bayan Muna Party List Representative and House Deputy Minority Leader Carlos Zarate slams the proposed deferral as anti-poor and regressive, adding that new tax measures should target the rich instead. Outgoing Socioeconomic Planning Secretary Carl Chua says if it were up to him, the hard-fought tax reforms they pushed through Congress should not be touched. But he defers to the DOF on the matter. He, however, believes the new government should live within its means.
Prudent fiscal management means you are responsible and you live within your means. Okay. You don't spend if you don't have revenue. If you want to spend, you spend in productive sectors in a targeted manner, and you raise the revenue.
The Development Budget Coordination Committee has pegged the 2023 budget at 5.268 trillion pesos from the 5.024 trillion budget for 2022. Chua says the best way to raise tax revenues is to grow the economy fast enough so revenues take care of themselves. For him, the best way to push economic growth to its full potential is to fully reopen the economy with 100% face-to-face learning in all schools. That will be the responsibility of Vice President-elect and incoming Education Secretary Sara Duterte.
The median age of the Philippine population is 24 years old. So 50% are below 24 years old and 40% are below 21 years old. In other words, 40% of the economy or the population are in school. And that's a big driver of economic activity.
Chua adds 20% of the Philippines is still under the stricter alert level 2 due to low vaccination levels. He says these regions, including parts of Mindanao and Cordillera, need to be assisted in their vaccination effort so the economy can reach its full potential. Both the DOF and NEDA say they stand ready to brief the transition team of the Marcos administration. Incoming Socioeconomic Planning Secretary Arsenio Balisacan has declined interviews while he gets up to speed with the Marcos administration's economic plans. Meanwhile, it is still unclear who will serve as the next finance secretary. Warren de Guzman, ABS-CBN News.
Well, just an update to the story of Warren de Guzman. This morning, President-elect Bongbong Marcos has nominated BSP Governor Benjamin Diokno as the next finance secretary, and he has accepted. More on that in our succeeding newscast. In the meantime, as for President-elect Bongbong Marcos, he says his administration will not move too fast in raising taxes. Marcos says his goal right now is to reduce tax collections from sectors that are badly affected by the pandemic.
Whatever fiscal policy is going to be, whatever the changes in fiscal policy that we are going to undertake, It will have to come. We have to examine it very well. We have to think it through properly. So yung mga pabigla-bigla na tinataas, binababa, hindi natin magagawa yun. Dahil kung gawin natin yan, it will, if there are too many moving parts, you cannot anticipate what will happen. So my approach to the fiscal policy, first is to codify it, to make it simpler, to make it more understandable, number one. Secondly, is to reduce as much of the tax collections from those who are suffering from the pandemic, the effects of the pandemic. That means MSMEs, agricultural sector, transport, iba ganun. So mabawasan natin. Let's hope we can raise funds in another area and use it there.
A food shortage in the Philippines is possible within the year. That's according to the Philippine Chamber of Agriculture and Food Incorporated. Its president, Danilo Fausto, says problems around the world, particularly the Ukraine-Russia crisis, will take a toll on domestic food supplies. He adds the food shortage may happen by the fourth quarter of the year.
The war in Ukraine is battering a food system that is already weakened by COVID-19, climate change, and an energy shock. Philippine agriculture, as always, has been experiencing difficult times right now. Providing cheap food for the consumers and fighting inflation through imports is a short-term solution. Producing our own food requirements, although a much longer process, will be more sustainable for our people. We appeal for a level playing field from government.
The group is now urging the incoming administration of Bongbong Marcos to hike its budget for the Agriculture Department and implement stricter measures against smuggling. They also highlight the need for stronger biosecurity measures at ports to prevent the entry of diseases like the avian flu and African swine fever. The Queen of Philippine Movies, Susan Roses, has been laid to rest today at the Manila North Cemetery. Let's get an update on that story from our correspondent, Ara Perez. Ara, go ahead.
Carmina, the site at around noon today, Susan Roses has been laid to rest here at the Po Mausoleum in Manila North Cemetery. The hearse arrived at 11:50 a.m. and only family members were allowed inside the mausoleum, while the media, fans, and supporters were allowed outside the fence. The interment took only about 15 to 20 minutes. We were headed by Senator Grace Poe and their immediate family. After the interment, the immediate family and close friends stayed for a couple of minutes to offer their prayers and flowers. Dubbed as the Queen of Philippine Movies, Roses was laid to rest beside her husband, the King FPJ. Among the personalities who visited or who attended the interment were Senator-elect J.V. Ejercito, actresses Boots Anson-Roa and Bibette Ortega. Senator Grace Poe did not give a statement after the interment and immediately left here at the Manila North Cemetery. So now fans and supporters are being allowed to come closer and offer their flowers and prayers for Ms. Susan Roses. Arina.
Thanks a lot, Ara. And again, our condolences to Senator Grace Poe and the rest of the Poe family. Now, before we go, the Philippine Tourism Department teams up with Funko and Disney to further promote the country. The collaboration introduces a new line of Funko Pops featuring Mickey Mouse in a Barong Tagalog and the national attire of the Philippines. The package also comes with a postcard from the country's major tourist hubs such as Boracay, Baguio, Cebu, and Manila. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.